Is there, well, you were just talking about sort of the relationship between natives and white people in one way.
Yeah.
Is there something that, if I use, say, this or parts of the interview in class, when I teach a class over in Germany, is there something that you would like to say to people listening in Germany? And that's one thing, and the other thing is a question. How do you feel about non-natives sort of poking their noses into your stuff? Maybe we'll start with the first, whatever.
Well, there's two of them, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, white people come, there's some of them that are sincere.
Mm-hmm.
They want to become, just use Indian ways to better themselves, and they don't try to be Indian.
Mm-hmm.
Those ones there, they're good ones. And then again, there's other ones there, and like sociologists and anthropologists.
Mm-hmm.
They come and they say they study Indians. They want to study how Indians live and everything. They put down on paper, mm-hmm, and everything. They don't learn nothing about Indians, those people. Because the only way you can study, you can know about Indians, to live,
mm-hmm,
with Indians and to, mm-hmm, live like an Indian. That's the only way. Mm-hmm. The only way they could learn something about Indians. Mm-hmm. The other ones, I don't care for. And then there are wannabes.
Sure.
As long as they wanna be Indians. They use mm-hmm Indian to make money or get a little bit of fame.
Yeah.
Like Grey Owl.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a prime example.
Hungry Wolf.
Yeah. What freaks me about Hungry Wolf, I think I said that. He changed his name, right? He had a Swiss or German name.
Yeah.
But he didn't change his first name. And his first name is Adolf. Now, who wants to be called Adolf? We discussed that in class in Germany. We just cracked up. Yeah. But I don't know.
And this country here,
mm-hmm,
called Canada,
mm-hmm,
United States, it's Indian. It's Indian country.
Mm-hmm.
I like to let that, everywhere I go, anything I say, I'd like to let people know that this is Indian country.
Mm-hmm.
This is Indian country, mm-hmm, you know. And if you go to another country, like say, if I go to Germany, I'm going to acknowledge these Germans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have respect for these Germans. So when other people that come to Canada, you know, the first people that they should acknowledge, the first people that they should respect are Indians. So,
mm-hmm,
I don't care how drunk they are.
Mm-hmm.
Respect these people, because,
mm-hmm,
it's our country. Our, yeah, country first. You know.
How do you feel? I mean, if you could have your way and change the world or so, what would you do? Would you send all Europeans back to Europe, all Asians back to Asia, or do you see any?
Well, if I had, well, you're talking about power, eh?
That's
talking
right.
About power.
Political power.
Power to change,
yeah,
to change the world. I think I would really, you know, talk about the same thing that Jesus talked about, you know, love and peace.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
For everybody.
Yeah.
Love and peace.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind about racial differences.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that.
I think that's really important, that one.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of things happening here in America too. A long time before white men came. Everybody, there was warpath,
yeah,
all over. People were killing each other and everything. But there's always a story. But somebody came to fix that up.
Mm-hmm.
Fix that up.
Mm-hmm.
There's two different stories. during Rock Path days, something happened. A person came, talk about love and peace, love with one another. Now some of these elders are starting to examine this person that came.
Because you get that in various traditions. Yeah.
He said that's the same man. He said they crucify on a cross. It's the same one. He said he was here in America. That's what they say. And I believe it myself.
Makes sense. Believe it,
And they talk about the same thing, love and peace. Love one another. Do good for one another. Don't talk bad for other person. Talk good. That's what I like, me. Peace.
I think there are probably, if you talk to people on a person to person basis, almost every person would agree with that. But then there's so many structures, conflicting interests, the rich and the poor, and all these subdivisions, and whoever's in power can play on those, they do play on those subdivisions. Everybody thinks they can get a little something for themselves if they use power or whatever, an economic power. But basically, once you sit down with people and talk to them, they all agree on this. So if you were to say something to people in Germany, that's what you'd be saying.
Yeah.
When there's another question in Achimuna, in the introduction, Maria Campbell sort of explains that it was a workshop or partly a workshop, and I never had a chance to ask her or anybody else who was involved in that. How did that actually happen? How did you come together at the same place and discuss your stories, or was there just one workshop? And did you write those stories while you were there at Gabriel's Crossing? I guess it was.
And they had different places. They had one in Saskatoon, and they had one in a little town between Saskatoon and PA, and they had one in Gabriel's Crossing.
Oh, I see.
Different places.
Did you attend them all?
Yeah. What we done there is we sat around in a circle and passed some objects around. Tell about what kind of object that you have. Tell a story about it, and out of there maybe a story will. Will come out.
That was, but that was clearly from the start that this would all be fiction, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's all be fiction.
What you said earlier that you wrote the story that you also told about the thunderstorm.
Yeah, I was writing on it. Yeah.
Yeah, and when you write about it, you said there are all these details also coming out. Do you feel? Are you thinking about those details, or do they come out?
And they come out. They just come out.
And you got any, explanation or name for that source? You got any ideas where it comes from? Or is it just a phenomenon that you think it comes?
I don't know where it comes. I don't know where it comes from. Like this whole story. I'm writing it, eh? I'm writing it. There's a group of people. They're walking in a wilderness. They're walking, and there's a grandfather, grandmother, mother, father, children. There's some children there. They're walking. I could see them right now. They're walking. And they're all carrying, something. They're all carrying packs. There's even dogs. There's even dogs, and the dogs got their own pack.
Yeah.
They're also carrying it. And they're walking through the wilderness. And they hear things. They hear. They could smell. They could see. It's just, this is in the summer. This is happening. This work is what's happening in the summer.
So you got the smell and the sound?
Yeah. And I don't know where that one, that is coming from. I don't know where it's coming from. Mm-hmm. All I know is that's the way they used to live.
Yeah.
Going from one place to another. That's the way I grew up.
Yeah.
I remember that. I grew up like that.
When you walk around in Regina, I would drive in a car outside. I don't know how that feels for you, but I was thinking, God, there's this immense space, and not one patch of it seems to be the way it was naturally. Everything's been touched and plowed and fenced off. And sometimes, sort of in my mind, I'd like to see the grass moving over that and see some buffalo moving on that or whatever. And, to think of that makes me really very sad. Does that happen to you?
Well, it doesn't make me sad, but I see the people the way they used to live around here.
Yeah.
I see them.
Yeah.
I know how they live.
Uh-huh.
I know how they cook.
Yeah. Okay.
I know the kind of I know where they hunt and what they eat.
Yeah.
And the roots that they pick.
Yeah.
Make tea.
Yeah.
I can see that. I can see it. I can see what they're wearing too.
Mm-hmm.
The way they're talking.
Mm-hmm.
I can see everything. I can see how our people used to live 500 years ago. I can see it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different from the way anthropologists tell us. It's different.
I don't know, maybe I'm getting older, but I start seeing a lot of that back home,
or
envisioning it,
thinking
about it, or when I say those little people.
Yeah.
When I heard the story first, I didn't see them. Now I can almost tell you what they're wearing, and what the wagons look like. Still haven't figured out the lantern, whether they're little, like little glass lanterns or torches. But, and sometimes there are some passages where when I think about this, what I really want to learn more is the stories exactly from that region where I'm from. I don't live there anymore, but I go there often. And there's some areas that are sort of left intact.
Yeah.
So you can envision. But I told you about this river, the Ida.
Yeah.
That river is dead. Right? They built the Kiel Canal that cuts through it. And then they built some big dams at the mouth of the Ida River, because that's tidal water from the North Sea. So that in order to stop the big floods or so, they have these big gates. But that in the water, right?
Yeah.
So they can open it, sluice it, and that stuff. That killed the river out. Fish are disappearing. They used to have sturgeon there. I think they caught the last sturgeon in 1936 or so. So the other night I was thinking about all this and all these images about the river. I don't know what I'll do with it, but one part would be the story about the ferryman. Another one would be about Afa. Afa is, that's another story. You want to hear it? There's I told you there were these tribes people north and tribes people south of the river. And in the south there were Saxon tribes, Holstens and Dithmarschens, and in the east there were Slavonic tribes. In the north, on the west coast, there were Frisians, on the east coast and the mainland too were Anglians, or There's an area called Angel, where the Anglos come from, the Anglo-Saxons, right? That's where they lived originally, and still do. They still call themselves Angelita, but some of them went to England around 500 and went all over the place. But anyway, the Holstein tribes people some time had made a conquest of Angla, and they had to pay tribute. And they had this old king, I think his name was Wermund or Sigismund, I forgot the name. I can look that up, it's written down somewhere. And he had this son called Offa, O-F-F-A, Offa. But he was paralyzed. He was blind and lame and couldn't do anything until he was 7. He couldn't see, he couldn't talk, he couldn't move a limb. When he was 7, he started looking and talking, but he was still paralyzed. And so Wermund didn't have an heir to sort of defend the country and to lead the warriors to defend it. And they were easy prey to the Holstein tribes, who made an inroad, and they said, okay, we'll accept the tribute every year, you've got to pay us, what, I don't know what they paid, gold or hides or wheat or whatever, I don't know. And they would come and accept the tribute. And then when Offa was, I think, 14, the king or the duke or chief, whatever, of the Holstein sent his two sons. He had two sons that were big fighters. They rode up and stood in front of Wermund. Wermund by that time was going blind. He was really old, sitting there on this. So we accept the tribute and we'll double it. Wermund said, you can't do that, that's unfair. So we can do it. Well, you can, if you don't want to pay it, in a year's time we'll meet at the Ida on that island and we'll negotiate, but then you'll have to bring it. If you want to, you can send your son fight us. And at that time, if retainers or armies or tribes met, there was always an option that the two chiefs or so, they would send two and they would fight it out and that was it. So they wouldn't kill that many, I guess. Anyway, that moment Offa stood up from this little bed or bunk that he had in that hall, and he stood up and he couldn't move and he said, I'll meet you there in a year's time. So he stood up there. They were surprised because they were laughing at him first, you know, and then they left, but they're still laughing. Yeah, you lame cripple. And so then the time grew nearer, and he didn't have any armor. He had no sword, he had no shield. Sigismund's sword was old and rusty, and so they melted that down, smelted it, and made him a new one. They didn't have a breastplate and good armor for him. So from his grandfather, who was buried already in a hill, they buried the head people in a hill. They said, well, there's some breastplates in there from the grandfather. So they dug that up and said, you put that on. But his grandfather was a mighty warrior, but he had such a big chest now that they had to put 7 new steel ribs in the side so it would fit him. He was really like that, you know. So then that day came and he rode down south to that river. That's where my hometown is now. And of course he met, and Wermund came along and they had like a little bridge overlooking that island so that they could see what's happening on the island, because it was only Offa and these two other from the Holsteins to fight there, and all the others stayed on the other either side of the river. And he had somebody to tell him, Wermund had some, because he was blind, what was happening there. And, well, there was a fight, and they taunted. First they taunted Offa because they said, there's two of us. And then there was the first clash, and Offa killed one of them. And then people, and somebody heard, Wermund heard that scream from that man when he stabbed him. He thought it was Offa, and he drowned himself, he jumped in the water. It was so sad. And then Offa went on fighting and he killed the other one too, and people have been free, and that's been the border ever since. And then they said they shouldn't be fighting anymore, so they started, this was a crossing stage, they went like a fourth through that island and then south again. So, but that's been the border town, 2,000 years, maybe more. So that story would go in there. And then the 30 Years' War. Then around the year 1000, there were Vikings, just north of the Haithabu, was a big stronghold for the Vikings. And they traded there, and they also used the river. They put some of their longboats on in rolls, on just logs, because there's one river going south, and then there's only a few, maybe 2 or 3 miles between that little river and the Eider. And that was one way of shortcutting the whole of Denmark and get from the east, from the Baltic, to the North Sea. There's a firth from the Baltic. At the end of that is Haithabu, the settlement. So all that went on there, this river. Then to the east of it, there were people from Slavonic tribes who went up to Haithabu in 1066, like the Battle of Hastings in England. And for the last time, by that time, there was a church already in Haithabu, and there were Christians and old believers. But the Slavonic tribes, they were really, really old believers. They had a different religion. They just burnt down the churches. They did that for a long time, resisted, you know. So they moved that village to Schleswig. And then there would also be images like Nazi time, the building of the canal and cutting through that river, the building of a huge railway bridge with trains going across, also taking people to Auschwitz. And there would also be one story, which is true, this is true now. I mean, this is our time, or when I was little, or before then. It would also be an image of my father coming back from an officer camp, a British officer camp after the war. My father was an officer, actually he was an engineer building aircraft, at least that's what they say. And he was interred there. There would be an image of him, you know, coming back with his uniform where they tore up off the insignia. And he was crying about that. He was a Nazi, I think. So that image would be there too. He died when I was 4. And another image, this gardener, Clausen is his name. During the Nazi period, a lot of Polish and Russian people were sort of incarcerated in Germany, or they were made to work like slaves without pay for German farmers, for industry. And this gardener had a girl from Poland and also a young man from Poland. I met his brother, that's how I knew about the story. He lives in Canada, the brother, now. This was after the war, and he hung on. They had a good relationship, actually. And he said, I'll stay. But then this Polish girl and he, they didn't get along too well anymore, and he drank poison one day. So there's this image, this gardener then put him on his truck, with a horse, I think it was. I don't think there were any cars after the war. No fuel for Germans anyway. This was occupied. Got it to the Kiel Canal, and they have a swing bridge there so boats can pass. And he had this dying man in his truck, and on the other side there was the British military hospital where he wanted to get him, you know. Well, eventually the bridge closed and he could go over, but he didn't save his life. So that all these images will be in there. And then the image of the final damming. And each time you'd have to look back at the Eider River and see how the plants, how the fish doing in there. And it's really a story of actually killing a river. And I think one day the human beings will disappear and maybe the river is going to make it. I don't know. And those things are in my mind now, and it's partly because I talk to native people. So, I don't know. This is a bit exotic, I guess.
There's places, there's one place to say, in, Portugal, there's a wood buffalo park, there's some Crees, they live, they have their hunting grounds in the wood buffalo park. There's some place over there, right? They didn't say exactly where, but it's an island.
Mm-hmm.
It's an island, it's a kind of a forbidden island. You can't go there. If you go to that island, you'll never return. They say, what's living in an island? It's a huge snake, great big one, like that, they say. He said, somebody seen it one time, he said. Place that you never go there, is it? I wonder if there's places like that in Europe too. I never know. I just came to my head.
No, I think it wasn't. We had stories about certain places where we shouldn't go because somebody would get you there. There's this walking movement, which is a lady that lives in the rye field.
Yeah.
No? And as a kid, rye gets very tall. It grows on sandy soil, but it gets about that tall. And if you're a little kid, you get in there, you get lost very easily. And when the rye, when it blossoms, blooms, it gives out this vapor that makes you very, very tired. So we were told if you get in there, the Robin movement, that's this lady, she's after kids, she steals them, don't go there, because she'll get you. But I think we were told this story, of course, not to go in there, because you can get lost and you can actually die there. If you fall asleep and you get this vapor. So stories like that, but or stories about swamp people, you don't go in the swamp. You see the lights. Maybe those are the lights of the little people, but it's also like wood when it's decaying, and it gives off this greenish fluorescent light. You get those little lights are from gas and fumes in the swamp and in the bogs coming up that are lights, and you're supposed not to follow those lights because they lead you deeper into the bog. What about, there's the one in Scotland about Loch Ness Monster, right? You heard of that?
Yeah.
But apart from that, if there's a snake, a big one, that would be the real ancient one, the Midgard snake that I told you about. But I don't know any stories that somebody says that is where it is. If it's there, it would be all around. There's one image that I really like. It's the world ash Yggdrasil. That's a big tree. And the roots expand far into the under-earth.
Mm-hmm.
And the trunk is here. And the branches are up in Asgard. So it transcends all the worlds. There's all kinds of life going on that tree. There are four deer that walk up and down the stem. There's three wise women sitting on the branches of, no, at the roots of it. They're huge, massive roots. They're cutting the life threads of people. But they can also see the future. At the bottom of it, there's a well. There's this one giant that keeps it, and he can see into the future too. And has a lot of power. And if you want to see into the future, there you've got to give him something. There's only one who actually did that. That was Odin, who was the supreme god. And he'd heard that his son Balder would get killed early. And he wanted to know whether that would happen and could he prevent it. So he had to give one of his eyes to get that knowledge. And so when you see pictures of Odin, he's always got an eye flat, because he gave one of his to see the future, and he did everything with all the other gods, nearly all of them, to not make that happen. He went to all the beings and said, you must not hurt Baldur. And they said, no, he's so wonderful, we don't want to hurt him. And there's only one being that he overlooked, and that was, do you know mistletoe? It's a plant that grows on trees.
It use doesn't have Christmas.
Roots, yeah? Yeah. It doesn't have roots of its own, right? I don't know how you call it. It sucks the life from a tree and lives off a tree. And he overlooked that because it didn't have roots. He was looking at all the plants, all that had roots, and he overlooked that it had roots up in the tree. So what Loki did was he carved an arrow out of mistletoe. I gave it to this blind hunter who lives up north, always clad in fur. And they had a shooting contest, bow and arrow. And he directed his arrow. Said, okay, you can do that too, I'll help you, although you're blind. Huh? And this blind man, of course, didn't know what he's aiming for, this blind god. So Loki directed the arrow at Baldur and cut him down. That made the world a little darker when Baldur disappeared.
I hate to tell you this, but I'm running out of time.
Oh, sure. Okay.
I'm running out of time.
Okay.